everybody, and welcome to the Wench Bench, where friends sit and talk about fabulous fictional females and how their stories have influenced us throughout our lives. My name is Allison.
And my name is Fonda. And today we're going to do something a little different. We decided that we wanted to do a very short and sweet and not in depth, just like bare bones, top three things that we like about our top three favorite male comic book characters.
Yay!
Yeah!
I'm so excited. It was so hard to just pick three.
I know. And so I'm going to be honest, all of mine are from Marvel. I know. There's like others, but it was just more like these top three that I chose are ones that I actually had like points to say and a favorite comic book to recommend.
Nice.
Versus like a couple other characters, I'm like, oh, I like them, but I've never dived into them more than just, you know, seeing them once or twice and be like, they're cool, I dig them.
Yeah. I also picked two Marvel characters.
Okay.
But same as you, I wanted to pick characters that I was pretty familiar with and that I think are very different examples mm-hmm. of what I enjoy from my comic book heroes.
Yeah. Would you like to start us off with your number one?
Yeah. So I'm going to start off with the Incredible Hulk.
Okay.
Yes. So specifically, I am going to be talking about the Incredible Hulk kind of from the Planet Hulk run. It is probably the most famous of the Hulk storylines. It is the comic series that Ragnarok was pulled heavily from, but there was like rights issues, and so they made it a Thor movie, but it was a Planet Hulk movie.
Okay. Now, question, when you say Incredible Hulk, is that the same as is that just Bruce Banner's Hulk?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Planet Hulk is a storyline that ran through The Incredible Hulk issues number 92 through 105 and The Giant Size Hulk number 1 starting in 2006.
Oh.
A quick little rundown of the story. Hulk has to save the world, and so S.H.I.E.L.D. sends him up into space. And at this point in Marvel, there was a group called the Illuminati that consisted of people like Reed Richards.
Okay.
Yeah. Reed Richards, Tony Stark, Doctor Strange, like very smart people. And they decided that the best thing for the Hulk was to send him to a different planet where there's no intelligent life, where he can be alone, and he's no longer a danger to society.
That is the worst form of social distancing I've ever heard in my life.
Isn't it, though? But something goes wrong.
Of course, things always go wrong.
And Hulk is sucked through a portal, and he crashes on a planet named Sakaar. And on this planet, there is a king. He's called the Red King, and he's, like, all-powerful, like, enslaves people, kills people for no reason, is just, like, an absolute egomaniac. Throughout the story, the Hulk starts off as a gladiator, and he gets his cool, like, gladiator armor like he had in Ragnarok.
Yeah, yeah.
And he fights the Silver Surfer, and he makes friends with a rock creature named Korg, just like in the movie. And he, like, liberates the planet's slaves, and he becomes, like, their king, and he falls in love with this, like, super awesome badass chick. And it's just such a cool story, and I love it so much.
Aw, so then what do you like about him? What are your top three things?
So very specifically, what I like about this version of the Hulk is that it shows his struggle with the two versions of himself. So it shows a very Jekyll Hyde kind of personality, where there is the Incredible Hulk, but then there is also Bruce Banner. And the two, even though they technically inhabit the same body, they are still two different people. Before this comic story, there was a couple instances where Bruce had essentially tried to kill himself in order to kill the Hulk. And the Hulk just kept getting stronger and coming back. So there's moments in this comic where Bruce is trying to fight to come back. And the Hulk is like, no, this is not a planet for Bruce Banner. He will not survive here. It is too vicious. It is too cruel. This is the Hulk's world. This is Planet Hulk. And so there's this really, like, this really interesting storyline. But then when he falls in love and they're on, like, their wedding night, she says that she needs to see all of him. And so he, for the first time being on this planet, lets his guard down and becomes Bruce. And she kisses him as Bruce, and then he turns back into the Hulk. But, like, he's kind of accepting his rage.
Yeah.
And he's coming to terms with both sides of his personality. So then Bruce and the Hulk are slowly becoming one person.
Oh.
It's such a beautiful story. And unfortunately, it doesn't end well.
Oh, no. Because
I don't think they knew what they had when they were releasing it.
Uh-huh.
It would have been a really good kind of Old Man Logan thing where it was just like, this is the end of Hulk's story.
Yeah.
He finds a place, he accepts himself for who he is, and he's happy, and he has babies, and the love of his life, who's, like, so cool. But that doesn't happen. Because at the end of the story, it seems as if Hulk's spaceship blows up and destroys this entire city, and then it kills his new wife. And so he has to come back for the next story, which is World War Hulk. Which I didn't like as much, because it just, I like seeing the Hulk as sensitive and kind in his own way, because he's never not angry. Like, he's constantly angry, and everybody's like, you're our savior, and he's like, fine, God, I'll help you, but it's because I want to, not because you want me to. So he's very, like, begrudging hero. And it's just, it's such a sweet story, and I think it was extremely well written, extremely well drawn. And it's just a bomb-ass comic. It's so fun. So I don't really know if there were three reasons in there, but that's why I love the Hulk, because he's just, he's such, like, an interesting psychological theory.
Yeah. I liked the Jekyll and Hyde thing, because that's very, like, I think there's a lot of fictional characters very much so inspired by Jekyll and Hyde.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting, too, to see the marriage of his two sides.
Mm-hmm.
And you really get to see why he's a hero at heart.
Yeah.
So who is your first pick?
I think you know. It's Wolverine.
Nice.
So I could do a whole episode about him. But if I'm just giving, like, my top three, like, skimming the surface reasons why I like him, and I want to tell you before I give my comic book recommendation and go a little bit, but the one main thing that drew me to him when I was a kid, in 2007, when the very first X-Men movie came out, and Hugh Jackman was on screen, oh boy. Oof. Let me tell you, that Hugh Jackman. But I was like, oh, he's cool, and my dad's like, oh yeah, Fonda, Wolverine's Canadian. And I was like, what? And so, shallow reasons, but I love him a lot, and he's Canadian, so that, like, made me excited, because I felt like most superheroes early on, like, the show didn't really tell us in the movies that he was Canadian. It wasn't until, like, later that we find out he is from Canada.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I felt like most shows, especially if they were from the United States, I was like, all these cool people are from America. So it was nice being like, this guy's from Canada.
Yay.
I really like another shallow thing. I love his catchphrase, bub. I just love how he says it, and it's just so, like, it can be endearing, it can be hateful, like, depending on how he says it, but it's always, like, bub. And I really like that, because I don't know if there's any other person that I know of in, like, mainstream media that has the catchphrase bub.
It's just such a weird, it's such a weird word, and it's just, like, a weird choice, but I love it.
I know. It's like, it could be literally anything else, but they wanted him to say bub. And then, like, the last reason, I guess, which is a little bit more into diving into who he is. He is a hero, but But no matter what, like, I don't care, like, what point in time you're reading or picking up the comics of Wolverine or learning about Logan, like, everyone consistently talks that, like, what he is good at is killing.
Yeah.
He's a hero who is very, very good at killing.
Yeah.
And that theme is, like, constantly discussed and challenged and brought up in the series, whether it's, like, him coming to terms with it or other people bringing it up. And I think there's no way to say that you can't remove that part from his character.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of goes to show that even if you're a good person still doing good things or wanting to do good things, no matter what, it could be anything, but there's going to be something that you hate about yourself that you're good at.
Mm-hmm. It kind of...
If that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, it makes sense. It kind of reminds me of, like, the nature versus nurture argument is very much exists within Wolverine.
Yeah.
Like, his nature, his design is to kill, and then his nurture is, like, this kind of begrudging hero who, against his better judgment, creates these connections with these do-gooders and eventually has to become a do-gooder himself.
Yep. And he hates being a teacher to the kids, but he's a really good, like, even though you don't think he is, he's a good role model.
Yeah.
Like, if I think of Rogue, if I think of Kitty Pryde, just like, yeah, he does a lot of shitty things and he drinks and he's, like, foul-mouthed and, you know, he doesn't treat his fellow colleagues like Scott the best. but like, at the end of the day, he will be there for someone in need.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of, like, tell you what you don't want to hear kind of guy.
Yeah.
And so, oh, I love him a lot.
He's so good.
I was really sad in the Logan movie. Which brings me to the comic I want to recommend for him.
Yay.
Which you brought up, coincidentally. Oh, but Old Man Logan. Yes.
Such a good comic.
It's by Mark Miller and Steve McNiven. I think I said his name right. But basically the premise is decades ago, the villains won and the heroes were killed and Logan retired to a farm and he was vowing to never pop his claws again. And I really like the term pop.
Yeah.
Because it's like boxing, like pop, pop.
Yeah.
But like, it's not schninked. Like, yeah. I really wanted them to use the word like schninked his claws again, but they use pop, which is fine.
Yeah, it's fair.
But in the comics, circumstance lead to him joining a blind Hawkeye. And they go eastbound and they go down and they're like delivering a secret package. And along the way, they run from hillbilly Hulks. Yeah. And Venom T-Rexes. Mm-hmm. And a vindictive child with an Ant-Man helmet. And it's a story with, like, a strong emotional vein that never forgets its, like, pulpy or pop culture roots, kind of.
Yeah.
But I think I read it after the Logan movie because I was like, oh, I don't want him to be dead. And it was really good. I really liked it. I especially liked Hillbilly Hulk.
Yes. Yeah. He's great in that one.
He was a good one. But yeah, I really love Wolverine so much. I'm glad that he's not dead. And it's like, really, in comic books, very few characters stay dead.
Yeah.
Like, even Gwen Stacy's alive as Spider-Gwen. But like, for the longest time, it was like, there was certain deaths that happened. And then when your character died, you're like, oh no, Wolverine's dead. But now I'm like, he's back. Like, I know he's back.
Yeah.
Yeah, at, like, some point.
The biggest issue, which is an underlying issue in all comic creation, which is why everybody's like, why do they have to change genders and colors of existing superheroes? The answer to that question, no matter where you're coming at for that question, we're not going to discuss those people, but it's because they don't pay creators anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They no longer have decent contracts to get artists and like writers or anybody who want to create something new because they never own what they create.
Yeah.
And they are never paid the appropriate amount of money. And so rather than ever creating something new, they just keep rehashing the old stuff, which sometimes when it's done well, something like Old Man Logan can be done really well. And same thing with Jane Foster Thor. Like, when there is a good story to tell, then it's a good story to tell, period. But in an industry where, yeah, they don't support creatives, it's like, we just keep telling the same stories, and so the storylines get so confusing, and it's like, is this one dead right now?
Yeah.
Are they alive? Are they in a different body?
You're like, which comic comes before this one? Because I thought this person was dead.
Yeah, for a while, Dr. Octopus was Spider-Man.
Oh my god.
So they're getting creative in, like, different ways.
They're exploring other things, which I think is okay. Because I actually had a tangent. I had an interesting conversation with my husband. I was like, I feel like characters don't die. And I feel like it's rare for us to get new superheroes. Or if they do, they're new, but they're taking on the mantle of a title. Like Miles Morales.
Mm-hmm.
Or Kamala Khan. Like, yep. They're new people, but Kamala Khan is taking over a name, and so is Miles Morales.
Yeah.
But then he brought up the point. He's like, I think in some way people are going to have to make an appropriate timeline of all the characters and be like, okay, we explored this idea about Captain America in the 60s. We no longer can do Captain America in the 60s. It's like, but then maybe we can explore him in the 1920s. Like, he's like, it's okay to explore different timelines if they haven't actually happened yet.
Yeah.
But the confusing part is when they're making new events in what seems like modern times.
Yeah.
And then you're like, what is actually happening? Versus, like, if you're telling me a historical thing with a character, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like a background story. I don't mind you giving me more background things, but like, I don't know. Like, when I found out Captain America was secretly a Hydra agent, I was like, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah.
Is with that one.
A lot. It's just, yeah, like I said, like they have these stories that they want to tell, but because they don't want to pay for new stories and new creators, and because they're honestly probably just too scared. Like, they're like, we know this sells, so just write another Captain America story.
Yeah.
Instead of trying new things and stuff, because we live in a capitalist hellhole that requires everything to make money all the time. And nobody gets to try anything new or fun ever.
You know what? That's why indie comics.
Yes, yes.
One day we'll have to talk about our top favorite indie comics.
Yes. I'm talking about one today. I don't really think it's constituted as an indie comic, but it's definitely a lesser known comic. So.
Ooh, okay. Is that your second hero you're going to talk about?
It is my second hero.
Ooh, please tell me, Allison. Dive in.
I wouldn't really call him a hero.
Okay.
He's from a comic series called Why the Last Man.
Oh, I think I remember hearing about this comic series.
Yes, it was created by Brian K. Vaughan? I'm going to go with Brian K. Vaughan and Pia Guerra.
I really wish comics, like when you search up creators, they have like a little audio thing beside them so they can tell you how to say their name.
Yeah, Vaughan. Vaughan? Vaughan?
Vaughan. I am so sorry, person. I know.
I'm going to go with Brian K. Vaughan.
Okay.
Published by Vertigo and was released between 2002 and 2008.
Vertigo is owned by DC?
Yes. Yeah, it was like a something. So, like, it's not really indie, but it's also, like, Vertigo kind of takes stories that aren't DC enough. For DC.
Got it.
If that makes sense.
No, that does.
In this comic, something, they don't really tell you what it is, even after you're done reading the whole comic. It's kind of vague about what the actual answer is and why this happened. But every mammal on Earth with a Y chromosome dies.
Oh no, 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 humans, no, not all the good boy dogs!
All the boy dogs!
No! Allison!
All the boy horses and the boy whales.
Oh no! Not the... Oh,
except
no.
For a young man named Yorick Brown and his capuchin monkey Ampersand.
Wait, did you say a capuchin monkey?
Is that not what it's pronounced as?
I don't know. I don't know what type of monkey that is. I'm just double checking. I heard you right.
Yeah, he's a capuchin. And it's like, you know how Ross had a monkey for a while in Friends?
Oh, yeah.
It's like one of those.
Okay, okay.
And so he has this monkey because he was like kind of training it for a... It's actually inspired by a real life organization. I believe it's called Helping Hands.
Oh.
Where you have like trained monkeys and they help people with disabilities and stuff. So they do things for them.
Aww.
So Yorick is the last man on Earth throughout like the whole book. And it's wild. Like, it's such a fun comic. I'm going to be talking about a bunch of the different female characters in it. Because obviously that's all you can talk about. So he is...
It's perfect for this series of ours.
Yeah. So he is the last Y chromosome having man on planet Earth.
Wow. Okay.
It's a really fun comic. And like, so everybody, like a bunch of people die, like planes crash, car crashes. Like, so over 50% of the population is dead because of all of the accidents and stuff too, killed countless of everybody else as well.
Jesus.
Because, like, yeah. You imagine every plane that's in the sky that's driven by a male pilot, every car driven by a man, like, all of it.
Oh, no. What if you're a heart surgeon trying to save... Oh, no!
So, like, the world collapses. And all Yorick wants to do is find his fiancé who's in Paris. And so he wants to, like, try and find his fiancé. And throughout the whole comic, he's being chased by multiple different parties who want him for various reasons.
Oh,
some
no.
To kill him, some to study him. One lady wants to clone him. And so there's a U.S. government that's following him, an Israeli army commando. There's a group called the Daughters of the Amazon, and a ninja, and like a bunch of other things. It is wild, and it's so fun. And so he is traveling to go try and find his fiance, and he's making all of these connections, and he's getting to know all of these different women. And for a while, his sister's trying to kill him because
what?
she was like brainwashed by like the Daughters of the Amazon. Like, it's
oh.
It's such a fun comic. But the biggest reason I like Yorick is that they could have written such an asshole.
Yeah. Or a misogynist.
Yeah, like somebody who's just like, oh, like, fuck yeah, I'm the last man on Earth. I'm gonna get so much fucking pussy. Like, I'm gonna get laid all the time. It's gonna be amazing. But, like, Yorick's not like that at all.
Aww.
He's like, all he's thinking about is his fiance and how he wants to get back to her. At one point, he kind of... Because I believe his fiance was actually planning on, like, breaking up with him before this happened.
Oh!
And so he's trying to track her down, and she's like, I don't know if I want to be with him anymore. And then he ends up kind of falling in love with this, like, agent who's trying to protect him, who was sent by his mom. And, like, it's just... He's such, like, a sweet boy.
Aww.
He's an amateur escape artist and, like, a magician.
Oh, boy.
He's just so sweet. And... Yeah, like I said, like, for a comic that could have so easily drifted into very inappropriate, like, territory, he constantly remains, like, respectful and kind, and, like, he just wants to, like, find his girlfriend and keep his monkey safe. And Ampersand is adorable. He's, like... the cutest little monkey ever. And they're just like, they're just the sweetest pair. And yeah, he's such a good example of like a good man.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, they, like, clone him. And
oh, boy.
A lot of stuff happens. One of the theories in the comics is that something in Ampersand's poop kept them both alive. Like, somehow Ampersand was, like, a mutation or something that, like, kept them okay.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it's a fun comic, and it's a great ride.
Aww. I will have to read it sometime. I have heard it's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll let you borrow them.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
just a little fun fact.
Oh.
Yorick has a Zippo lighter that says fuck communism on it. And that is a direct reference to the Preacher comics that I've talked about.
Oh!
Mm-hmm. Because in the Preacher comics, Jesse has that lighter.
Hey, you know, Easter eggs. Love good little Easter eggs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I also got to meet Pia at a comic convention.
Oh.
She drew me a little picture of Hero. The Hero is the name of Yorick's sister.
Oh. Yeah.
So I have a little Hero sketch.
Lucky.
Because she's my fave.
Oh, you're gonna talk about her someday, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we'll get into all the, like, the drama, because I'm pretty sure it's the Daughters of the Amazon who are, like, going around and, like, burning sperm banks and stuff, because they're, like,
you know, they see it as... I oddly had a question about the sperm. Is all the sperm with Y chromosomes gone?
Yes, I believe it is.
Oh,
it's been a while,
boy,
since I've read it, but I believe, like, yeah, like, basically, if there's a Y chromosome, it's wiped out.
Oh.
I actually am pretty sure that astronauts get down from the space station somehow, and there's, like, I think it's two men and a woman, and the two men die right away.
Oh, like, so space is okay.
Space is fine, but Earth is not. So they came back, they found out that, like, all of these men died, and then they just fucking die.
Oh, no!
Yeah.
Oh, that really sucks. That is very unfortunate.
Yeah. It's wild. This is a wild comic.
Oh, boy. Sounds like a good ride for a future episode.
Oh, yeah. It's gonna get wild. It's gonna get weird. So, who is your next favorite male character?
Oh, well, it is Gambit.
Oh, nice. Nice, nice, nice.
He is, I think, kind of underrated.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's so cool, and I'm very sad that Channing Tatum movie hasn't gone through, and the Gambit movie keeps getting canceled, because that could be a really good superhero spy movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, going into the top three things. I love his mutant powers.
Yes.
It's so interesting, and they make him a really good thief from, like, molecular acceleration that allows him to, like, do that really cool card trick that everyone sees. Mm-hmm. Where, like, where he lights up a deck of cards with his purple glowy... It looks like magic to me at first, but it's not. And then he uses a kinetic energy to have them blow up things.
Mm-hmm.
But he also has hypnotic charm, like his eyes.
Yeah.
Like, he can charm anybody, no matter who they are, no matter, like,
yeah,
what they're into. He can just charm them.
I mean, the accent helps. I mean,
that's my second thing. I was just about to say his accent is so good. And, like, from what I've read, I think earlier series were a little bit more problematic with how he used his hypnotic charm.
Mm-hmm.
But when he met Rogue in the comics, from what I've read, and people could, like, please tell me if I'm wrong, I'd like to know, but he never used his hypnotic charm necessarily to be that asshole who's just going to fuck anybody he wants.
Yeah.
He always used it, from what I've seen, and I'm very thankful of it, as more of a means to, like, have people feel engaged with him, be interested in him, so he could be the spy that gets the info.
Mm-hmm. Have people get more invested in him.
Yeah. And so I really like that, because I think if his power was used as a very gross way, I would not enjoy him.
Yeah. it's definitely like a possibility that that's what it could be used for, but
yeah,
it's the responsibility of the creators to limit how problematic.
Yes, it is. I agree 100%. The last thing I like, and one day I'm going to talk about this character, but his on-again, off-again romance with Rogue gets me like, oh damn, because I love them so much together.
Yes, they're so cute.
They're so cute. I love them. Especially in like newer comic series, they do a really good job of like diving into their interesting dynamic.
Yes. Yeah. Which... like, I remember the old, like, original, like, X-Men cartoon, and oh my God, I love his, like, headpiece, because it's, like...
Yes, with the poof hair.
His hair just, like, poofs out the top, and it's, like, a headband, and it doesn't do anything to hide his, like...
Yeah.
His face.
Face. It's just there. It's a very 80s thing.
It's such an 80s thing, and I love that. Like, the weird 80s, like, head wraps, where it's just like, this is my alter ego, Gambit. And you're just like, what? Like, it doesn't hide like Luke Cage. Who you are. Like,
like, Luke Cage has that. He's like that.
Yes, yeah, Luke Cage had his weird headband.
But, yeah.
His... it's so fun when they called that out in the Luke Cage...
Oh, same. I thought it was fun. I was like, haha.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so like, I really like Gambit a lot, and I want to read more. The last time I read a comic series with him in it, and it's the one that I want to recommend, is actually called Gambit, King of Thieves.
Mm.
And in it, Gambit received his own solo ongoing series written by James Asmus and illustrated by a host of like different artists. And the series brought back the character to his roots as a master thief.
Ooh.
With heists and capers all over the world that led him to cross paths with other prominent Marvel characters, including Hawkeye and Pete Wisdom. And it's just like, that's all it is like a superhero doing cool heist shit.
That's awesome.
And like thieving and capers. And I'm like, I am totally down for that. And I would love to see a movie that kind of embodies that part of Gambit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care so much for like the huge world issues that like X-Men always had to deal with in the movie franchise. I would totally be okay with just seeing Gambit occasionally meet up with other superheroes or supervillains while he's just trying to be a thief.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing that I would like to see companies like Marvel do more, especially now seeing how successful like the TV shows and stuff are. Like, do smaller scale movies. Like, not every superhero has to be the world is gonna end and this superhero has to save them. It's like, I like my friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. I like him just like fighting for New York. I don't need him like fighting earth-shattering creatures alone. Like,
yeah,
it's like, and same thing with something like Gambit. I think that's why I enjoyed Ant-Man so much, is because
yeah,
it was
centralized in like one area with one thing.
Exactly. It was a heist superhero movie. Like, it was super fun. He had to like go and break in, but there was like little like fun superhero stuff. And, like, the comedy was so, like, family-friendly and cute. And it was just, like...
Paul Rudd.
It was just so, like, refreshing and just generally generally...
Take your time.
Enjoyable. I was, like, energizing? Generally...
Energizing?
Enjoyable.
Red Bull?
Gives you wings.
Yeah. But I think he's really, really cool. And I... should definitely pick up more with him, because I know he's, I don't know for sure, so no one quote me on this, but I think the last big solo series I remember was the King of Thieves one, which is why I read it,
because
mm-hmm. Gambit is very much so like a minor superhero. He shows up in a lot of other people's stuff.
Yeah.
Or it'll be like Gambit and this person or someone else and Gambit. Like, it's not always just him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny, too, that you talked about Wolverine and Gambit, because Gambit's in Wolverine Origins.
Yes!
Which also
such
includes...
a bad movie.
The last character that I'm going to talk about.
Oh!
Deadpool!
Oh! See, I was wondering, because he's such, like, he's very much so a lot of people consider him more of an anti-hero.
Yes.
So I was like, ooh, is Allison gonna include any anti-heroes? And you fucking did!
Yeah.
And he's like,
So, I'm 100% not talking about him from that movie, because I don't see that being Deadpool at all. Like, it was a really...
No, I think Ryan Reynolds would be very upset at us.
Yes. And I do think that the Ryan Reynolds oversought of the later iterations of the Deadpool movies, I think, are a little closer to the mark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in my mind, they never go far enough. Because Deadpool comics were my first real dive into comic book collecting. It's the first long run that I had. Like, I had a bunch of other ones of, like, one-shots of Spider-Man and, like, different, like, short runs, like Planet Hulk and, like, Maximum Carnage and these, like, self-contained stories. I had a bunch of those, but I had never really read a series the way that I read Deadpool.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I started reading Deadpool in his 2009 run. So I started reading from 1 to 49. It's started being released in 2009. I was just collecting it in trade paperback.
I had just met you at the Cineplex that year.
Yes. And so I had started reading those ones, and then I eventually got into the Deadpool core little short run where he runs around with, like, other versions of himself.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was another series called Deadpool Merc with a Mouth. Like, that's when I kind of started getting into him. That was the heyday. That is the top time for comic book sales of Deadpool.
Oh.
Because that's when, like, the stories were, they were fun, they were nonsensical, they were age appropriate for kids from probably, like, 9. I don't know, I'm not a parent. Don't at me. From about, like, 9 to, like, however old you wanted to be. Like, they were funny. It was almost a kind of Ren and Stimpy, like, Looney Tunes level of violence. Like, it was so over the top that it was never particularly, like, gory, but it was, like, it was just wacky. It was fucking loony. Like, the insanity in that series is just so incredibly over the top. And although I did enjoy the Ryan Reynolds, or the Deadpool movies, I wanted more. I wanted more wackiness, and honestly, I disagree with making him swear. Just, that might be a controversial statement, but he didn't swear in the comic books. He didn't say fuck all the time. Like, I think that it was...
Does he swear in current comic books?
I'm not sure, because I stopped reading after that run. Like, it just got to be a lot, and then it kind of changed writers, and then it lost that happiness and that joy and that, like, surrealist, almost. It lost that kind of aloof, like, not aloofness, but yeah, it was very cartoonish almost, and it kind of lost that, like, that wackiness and that extent, because it was so over the top, and you can't necessarily continue that, like, sometimes, because then everybody just tries to go bigger next time, or go better next time, and it just didn't feel the same, but in them, in order to have these comics be available for people of all ages, you couldn't put in, like, swear words and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he said a lot of, like, weird, like, I can't remember any in particular, but it's like, oh, like, grandma's lunch bag. Like, just stupid, like, nonsensical terms. So it's like, he didn't swear, but, like, you understood that it was a replacement for a swear word.
Yeah.
Kind of like when people say, oh, fudge. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was like that. So, like, yeah, I want more. I want more crazy out of my Deadpool, because he is fucking batshit. And that's, like, my number one reason why I love him, because he is crazy. And there's, like, multiple different colors of bubbles. So there's, like, always three versions of him talking to himself.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, like, physical Deadpool, and then there's Deadpool's two voices in his brain. At minimum.
Minimum.
And they're two different color boxes, and he, like, refers to them. They're kind of like his, like, angel and devil shoulder ones.
Okay. Because
they're always arguing. And through this run, Deadpool decided that he wants to become a hero. And so through all of this 1 through 49, he is trying to be a better person. And it's so cute because he's like, I'm going to be a better person. But his brain doesn't work that way. And so he's like, oh, if I just kill this dude, it'll rescue all these people. And Spider-Man shows up and he's just like, fuck, dude, no killing. Stop. And like Deadpool like begs Spider-Man to train him. So for a little while, Spider-Man is trying to train Deadpool to be a good guy. He tries to join the X-Men for a little while.
Oh my gosh. The one thing I do enjoy is the Spider-Man and Deadpool relationship. It's very fun.
Yes. I did read those comics. I actually have those in like issue. There's a Spider-Man Deadpool run, which is really fun.
In the early comics, is that when they say that Deadpool's Canadian? Because I know that Deadpool's Canadian. It is a hardcore fact.
Yeah. Deadpool is Canadian and he's super awesome and like vocal about it because he kind of. In the earlier versions of Deadpool, he was just another mercenary.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't until, like, 2009 when he started getting, like, really, like, breaking the fourth wall, like, all those kind of weirdness. Throughout this run, one of his best friends is a Hydra agent named Bob.
Bob!
So good. Love Bob. As I mentioned, tries to become an X-Man, fails spectacularly, convinces Spider-Man to turn him into a good guy, also doesn't work well.
Yeah.
He joins the Secret Avengers, kind of. I'm not going to get into that. You got to read the comics to figure it out. He fights vampires, kills an alien hitman, which means he is now married to that alien's wife.
Oh.
And then he travels to space and is now a space mercenary. He tries to get the Hulk to kill him by, like, annoying him.
Okay.
And... like, one of the last stories of the comic is he has a stalker who's been collecting pieces of him from his, like, battles all around the city.
Oh!
And, like, keeping them in her fridge. And when he finds this out, like, she ends up dying. And so he throws out all the pieces into the garbage bin. And then when they thaw, they grow back into, like, evil Deadpool.
Ew!
Like...
ew, I'm just... ew, that's so gross.
He's like a patchwork version of him, and it's like all his different costumes kind of patched together.
God.
So like, seriously, like just those statements, these stories are fucking wild. Like, oh, God. They're just so weird.
Don't you have a favorite video game of Deadpool?
The Deadpool video game is very fun. I did enjoy it. It's just the general Deadpool video game. It's a good time. So yeah, like it's just, he's just so fun. And I love that kind of era of Deadpool from that time. Another quick little fun fact for all you people out there. When Deadpool was created, he wasn't a particularly original character. This is pretty well known by now, but some people don't know this. He's pretty much just a ripoff of Deathstroke.
Yeah.
Because Deathstroke's name is Slade Wilson, and Deadpool's name is Wade Wilson. They're not really hiding it.
No.
At all. Deathstroke is also a super agile soldier-style character, and so, since that's what Deadpool started as, he wasn't really that, like, fantastic, and I think that's why when they changed him to, like, the crazy, that's why he did so much better. But then DC, somebody in DC who I love, by the name of Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti, decided that they were going to continue the tradition of DC and Marvel swapping characters back and forth. And they created the character known as Red Tool.
Oh, I remember hearing about this.
So Red Tool is in the Harley Quinn comics. He is essentially Harley's stalker who turns into, like, her, like, good-natured, like, friend character. And Red Tool's, like, actual name is Wayne Wilkins.
Okay.
So it's really, like, it's...
continuing the mantle.
Yes, it's continuing the mantle and, like, all in good fun kind of trading of ideas. And I also think it kind of came from, for a while there, people were really, like, shipping Harley Quinn and Deadpool online.
Oh, I think there's, like, a pretty famous, I don't know if it's a fan drawing or if it's from someone from Marvel or DC, but there's a picture of, like, them smooching or about to smooch.
Yeah, something like that. But either way, it was just, it's a fun little, like, tongue-in-cheek reference. But Red Tool's hilarious. He carries around tools and, like, throws saw blades and stuff. But yeah, that's why I love Deadpool, because he's wacky and awesome. So who is your final favorite male character?
So this was difficult for me because anyone that ever comes into my house will see that I have a bunch of Spider-Man stuff in my house.
Yes.
I just do. And so I'm like, maybe I'll talk about Peter Parker. I'll talk about Spider-Man. But then I was like, but you know who I have been really enjoying lately? And it's because of the Spider-Verse movie.
Yes.
Miles Morales.
Oh, he's so good.
I know. I've always thought that his charm was his, like, initial reluctance to be Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And his fear that he wasn't smart enough or capable enough to fill the mantle. And I really like that. And he is a kid. Like, he's not the high school kid about to graduate from high school. He is a young teenager at the start. And I think for most of the comics he's in, he's just a kid.
I think so. I'm not 100% on
that. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure he does, of course, like, age up for other things. Like, I know that there's one point, there's a comic book series with him and Spider-Gwen getting married.
Yes. Oh, they're so cute.
Oh, they're very cute. But yeah, so I'm like, he is just a kid, and he's kind of a good superhero for young kids.
He's great.
Yeah, especially in Spider-Verse. That was a really, really good movie to introduce him to mainstream media.
Yeah.
Really good. And the last thing I want to just quickly touch on before I recommend a comic is his costume.
Oh, so good.
Is minimal, and I really dig it. Yeah. Like, it's like a very clean design.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it very much. And it looks really cool.
So cool.
Ugh. Sorry. I really enjoy a good costume design.
Oh, yeah. Random side tangent about Spider-Verse. Like, that is my favorite superhero movie.
Oh, it's so good.
That's been released. It's got such a great storyline. It's beautiful. Like, his showing his family, his, like, loving mother and father. Mm-hmm. Like, raising him to be a good person. So you're like, it's because of, like, their influence that he's a good person. Yeah. His dad, like, being a cop. The whole, like, uncle story.
Oh, my God.
Like, it's so good. And it's so well done. And after I watched it in theaters, I couldn't get over it at the end. Because it's like, I got to watch a comic book come to life.
Yeah. They did such, like, a good job.
That's all I want.
I'm so excited for the next one. Ugh.
And then, like, freaking
God, the feet. Oh, yeah.
So good. And, like, the way that it's just all of the character designs in that movie.
Hobo Peter Parker.
Yes. Oh, dad bod Peter Parker. Like, the character designs in that movie were incredible and not something that you could ever get away with in any medium other than animation. And everything they did with it, how funny it was. Like, when he hits the guy with the bagel, it's his bagel.
It's really... Like, Peter Porker.
Peter Porker.
Fucking love that movie so much.
It's so good.
I know people have, like, minor flaws with it, depending on where you're coming from with other things. But, like, I think if you're just talking about the movie straight off the bat as what it is, very fucking good.
Yeah. Solid solid movie.
Very solid. And a good example of, like, more movies can be done this way.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll see more.
It doesn't have to be that style of animation, but more movies can be done animated for superheroes to tell a good story.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The comic I want to recommend is from the Ultimate Comics Spider-Man series.
Okay.
I believe issue 16... quote me if I'm wrong, please. But it's called Venom War.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Bendis and Pacelli, I think I'm saying their names right. So although the Venom War story was memorable for its first ever Miles versus Venom tale, I believe that Bendis and Pacelli's mini epic within it is best remembered for the way it gave Miles his first real loss. Because it's unfortunate, but pretty much every rendition of Spider-Man or Spider-Woman or Spider-Pig, everyone has a goddamn loss that shapes them to be the Spider-Person that they are. And spoiler alert, I guess, but for Miles, it's the fate of his mom.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like his version of the death of Gwen Stacy that it was for like the original Peter Parker.
Yeah.
So potentially I think people were saying in like some quick things I was reading in the comments section online after I read it digitally was that this could have been the end of Miles Morales' superhero days because it happened when he was a kid. And he violently wanted to reject the Spider-Man persona in the comics for that one. Mm-hmm. But even though tragedy is inherent for all Spider-Man and Spider-Women, Miles was no exception to this rule. And he does eventually pick up the mantle because there's more Miles Morales as Spider-Man comics.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just kind of like a really good one because he is a kid, and as I was reading it, I was thinking a lot of other kids that maybe have lost a parent at such a young age could connect with this superhero.
Yeah.
I couldn't really connect with Peter Parker.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like, I wasn't his age. I never had my uncles and my aunts raise me. I know what it's like to lose somebody, but, like, I couldn't personally connect on, like, that core level.
Yeah.
But I think for Miles, especially because he's a person of color.
Yeah.
Because of both of his parents in the comics.
Yeah.
Miles is African American because of his father, but he's also part Puerto Rican because of his mother. Like, there is a lot happening. And I think anyone that can identify or view themselves like Miles, like, they're going to really connect with it.
Yeah.
And feel for his loss. And so that's why I thought it was good. Anyway, so I just think Miles is, he's really good. He's a good character. I really like him. I am excited to see what they do with him again because they're doing another Spider-Verse movie.
Mm-hmm.
And
Yeah, I think he's such a great role model too. I don't read much of him in the comics, but definitely as far as like the Spider-Verse is concerned, I think it's a really good choice for them to have a hero who chooses to be a hero without that, like, hero history, right? Like, he loses his uncle, but so many comics, it is this tragic thing where it's, like, you lose your parents, you lose your girlfriend, you lose your boyfriend, your wife, like, whatever pushes you to be a hero is always this, like, tragic loss, whereas I feel like Miles had the desire to be Spider-Man before he lost his uncle.
Yeah.
He wanted to be a hero. He wanted to help and to save and to make sure that he never had to watch another Spider-Man die. And, like, I thought that that was it was a very good touch to have him still have both of his parents, to have this loving home and healthy home life to come back to, which I don't think is shown enough in media.
Yeah.
Kind of, period. So it's cute seeing him with his little happy family.
I know, I like the Spider-Verse.
How much his mom loves him and just kisses him all the time.
Oh, I know.
Or his dad makes him say he loves him.
I know. It's like, I love you, son.
It's just, like, so cute. They're just, and yeah, like showing those kinds of emotions and showing how that, like, that's made Miles stronger. Having parents who are open emotionally with him and encourage him to be that too.
Yeah. So
it's very, very well done character. And I love him. Cole.
I know, he's good. Anyways, so, I don't, yeah, I guess that's why we like these three male comic book characters. A lot of them are from Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll diversify a bit next time. I didn't feel like getting into Aquaman today.
That's fair. And I will be quite honest in saying that I sometimes don't know where to pick up a lot of newer reads.
Yeah.
Until they blow up and everyone's like, you gotta read this thing on Twitter. And I'm like, okay, cool, thank you.
There's just so much.
Yeah, it's definitely easier to pick up like shows and movies than sometimes it is to pick up comics.
Yeah, definitely.
Allison, is there anything that you maybe want to quickly say that you're excited about?
Well, today, and well, right now, kind of when we are recording this, the quarantine restrictions are starting to lighten up here in BC.
Mm-hmm.
So Fawn and I got to see each other.
Yeah.
For Dungeons and Dragons yesterday.
Oh.
And I got to go to my parents' house for dinner. So it's been really nice getting to be able to see people again in, like, small, like, limited numbers.
Very limited, yeah.
But for the first time in, like, 3 months, or I guess a couple weekends ago when we were first allowed to, like, open up and go to somebody's house, I got
to... May 16th, 2020 was when they announced we could... kind of start trying.
Yes. So on that weekend, we did go to my parents' house for dinner. They were the only people that we went to go see. Everybody else had to wait until like June.
Yep.
Yeah. And so that was the first time that I got to hug my mom in like 3 months. So that was really nice. I love hugs. So I missed being able to like hug people.
I know, but now it's like, so weird when I do see people. I'm like, do you still want hugs? Like, I don't.
I know. I miss hugs. But slowly they're being welcomed back into my life. And hopefully this all gets back to the semblance of new normal that is our world now. So I'm excited about slightly lessening restrictions and being able to play D&D in front of people again. You can find us wherever podcasts can be found. Please make sure to rate and subscribe if you haven't already. You can follow us on Tumblr, Twitter, and Instagram at WenchBenchPod. And if you want to reach out, you can send us an email at WenchBenchPod@gmail.com. All of the art for the Wench Bench was designed by the wonderful Tessa Joyce Reakin. You can find her on Twitter at Werevile. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh no, 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 not all the good boy dogs.